Welcome back to the podcast, Growth and Jams fans. Today, I am joined by Arthur Dominguez, also known as 30, founder of 1718 Media and one of the hosts of the In-Laws podcast. He's here to talk about his unique perspective on life and journey through life, as well as music. I hope you enjoy the show. I think one of the best ways to start this off would kind of be to detail a little bit how we came to know each other. I think it's pretty unique as well. Similar to Caleb, I think we always knew of each other, had different groups. We were in different grades, but through Twitter, I was able to, you probably didn't know this, but silently admire you in a way because of your creativity, your passion for music as well. And I've always admired your mentality, your maturity, the way you handle things. And you're all around solid guy. Catch us up on the things that you've been doing since high school. It's been quite a bit of time since we've really been in close proximity all the time, hanging out, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So go ahead and talk about, you know, your podcast, 1718 Media, and the path that you've taken since high school.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you on going hard on your podcast. I've really enjoyed all your episodes so far, and I'm excited for the future of it. I'm really happy to have a small role in helping you. And
thank you.
When you're teammates in a sport, like, you'll always have that bond. So
100%.
I definitely knew of you from social media and stuff, but I think it was really cool to have that kind of brotherhood in a way.
Definitely,
in high school,
yeah.
When we were teammates in soccer. So as far as my podcast, I have a podcast, if the listeners don't know, called The In-Laws, which Saul was actually a guest on a couple weeks ago. So you should go check that out. And then we have this brand called 1718, which is an online brand and network, a way for us to kind of network our projects together. So, for example, how it started was back in 2018, my brother-in-law Phil was making music, and then we had plans to start this podcast, and we were saying it would be cool if we had a way to kind of network those together, you know, and have it under like one umbrella brand. So that's how it came to start. We understood pretty early that it wasn't really a monetary business, more of a way to, like I said, just network them together and so they could kind of benefit from each other. It's definitely like a passion project for me and for us. It's something we definitely want to continue to work on and see where it can go. As far as turning it into a business, it's kind of tricky because it would involve, with any sort of creative project, it kind of involves having a large audience to be able to monetize, whether that's with podcasts, you know, using ads, or in music, just having a large audience and to start, you know, selling merch and getting money from streaming royalties and stuff like that. So it's definitely something I am looking forward to keep growing and working on. But as of right now, that's kind of all it is, just kind of a passion project and something to keep working on.
I've always really admired since you started 1718 Media, and I saw it kind of developing because you're a really creative person, and I knew that you would kind of find a way to find a role that you were able to create, and I didn't know what that would be. I think for a long time, you talked about before that you had a music studio at your house, so I thought it may be something like that. When was it that you really decided, like, I'm going to pursue this path instead of X, Y, and Z, and how has that translated to, like, your overall happiness and stuff like that along the way?
So, yeah, pretty early on, especially in high school, I kind of knew that I didn't really want to pursue going to college. And I think most of it had to do with I just wasn't very motivated in school. And I listened to your episode with Caleb, and I feel like my situation was very similar to his. I was always pretty smart, but I just hated learning about things that didn't interest me. And I think that's a lot of what school is a lot of memorization and just having to sit through subjects that can be very tedious and just not very interesting to I mean, some people, you know. And I think that's the hard part about trying to educate so many people at the same time, is that everyone's different, you know. So and I think that's why it gets better in college, because you can try to kind of choose your path of where you want to go. But I knew pretty early that I didn't want to go to college. What was scary was that I didn't know what exactly I wanted to do, and to some extent still don't, but at least I'm like working on different creative projects and just getting better in my skills, honing in on those. And something that I really appreciate about creating all these different projects, whether it's what I'm doing with websites or in podcasts or anything, I'm learning so many different skills that I'll be able to market, you know, in the future.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I think what's hard about not going to college is that I haven't really met a whole lot of new people, especially when I'm trying to work from home as much as possible. So not really meeting new people and having that social impact that college can have, while also simultaneously distancing myself from a lot of like friends and people I grew up with.
Yeah.
That's been kind of tricky, because when you're not meeting any new people to socialize with and get close to, while also distancing yourself from some of the people you're used to being close to, that gets tricky. So that's something I'm still trying to like navigate through. And I have met some good friends and also reconnected with old friends. So yeah, I would love to just meet new people who are also creative, because I've never really known a lot of people who are interested in similar things like I am, in technology and web design, and just, you know, I've been editing videos since I was a young kid. So I would love to just kind of network with more creative people if possible. So that's something I definitely want to try to do more in the future. But yeah, it's definitely been interesting, that the path. I knew it would be a unique one, but you know, I've enjoyed it. I feel like I've been on a kind of my own journey of self-improvement since, you know, like 2016-ish, which we'll probably touch on pretty soon in the episode.
Yeah, definitely. It takes a lot of courage to do that. I mean, you see everyone, especially everyone that we knew, it seemed like very much one of two paths, where it's like you go straight into working or you go straight into college, and there wasn't much in between from there. So I think you taking this path takes a lot of courage, but it's also awesome to watch, because again, not very many people take that path, but it's great to see that you're actually making tangible creations and projects with it. Is there any struggles, I guess, that you've experienced, or doubts that you've had along the way, where you've kind of questioned what you've been doing, or I guess, yeah, any reservations that you've had?
Yeah, I definitely, sometimes I just wake up, and I think to a minor extent, I kind of struggle with anxiety. Not a whole lot, but there will be some nights where I just can't go to sleep, and I'm just kind of freaking out, like just self-reflecting and overthinking. I think a lot by nature about a lot of things. So I definitely sometimes feel anxious that I'm not very clear on what I want to do, and I haven't necessarily found success, even though I'm working on a lot of things I enjoy doing. So I think that's just the scariest part, is just all the uncertainty. I think everyone kind of experiences this in their own ways, but I would say that's probably been the biggest struggle, just kind of not having a clear image of where I'm going to be. But it's also, that can also be kind of the most exciting part, at least for me, not really having a set path.
Is there any specific end goal that you have in mind of what you want 17, 18 Media to look like, or what you want the in-laws to look like in the future?
So as far as the in-laws, I'm not sure. I do have some ideas that we could expand into like some video series. And then also something, a great marketing effort with podcasts is to also have a video version of it. It's hard right now because we've been recording remotely, but a lot of podcasts even post their remote recording videos on YouTube, and it's an easy way to grow. So I'm not sure what the future of the in-laws looks like. I think it's been so easy to keep creating that because we just enjoy it. And the reason it's so valuable, at least for me personally, is because I've edited the whole thing throughout, and it's literally taught me A to Z how to create a podcast, you know, as far as starting from equipment to the editing process, the recording process, the publishing process. So now, and I found that I'm pretty passionate about it in general. So now I can take that and help other people and turn it into a business, which I'm starting to do. So regardless of what the future of that podcast looks like, we're going to keep creating it. But it's been very valuable experience all around, and we always look forward to recording those episodes. So with 17-18, I would love to bring more projects on to that. And I think the overall goal of the brand is to just empower people to create the projects that they want to create. We did have some plans to try and actually open like a recording space for not only music, but also podcasts with like, you know, some of the best equipment that we would all be able to just use and bring guests to and actually have a physical space to record. And then the pandemic hit, and it kind of threw a big stone in that. But that is something that we're thinking about. And then, so yeah, that's as far as the plans we have for that. But I would love to just bring more people on, help them however I can, and just see where it can go.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm super excited that you're starting that business of podcast editing and producing and all that, because you've made this process for me a lot easier. Because for someone that comes into this not knowing what's going on, it's pretty challenging, especially if you're going in the dark type of thing. So it's great that you're marketing that and able to help other people as well and hone those skills even more. Yeah, you touched a little bit on success a couple minutes ago. Would you mind expanding on, you know, your idea of success and what you feel right now as far as the path that you're on, how that has translated to, I guess, your overall happiness? If you think that you are happier now and on this path than you would be on a different path had you chose something else.
Yeah. So I think, kind of like I mentioned, going down the path that I've kind of chosen to go down, it's scary, but I think I've been able to find happiness in just creating things that I enjoy creating. I think a lot of people go down the path that's expected of them and they find out later that they don't enjoy what they're doing every day. So I think even though I'm not really set in stone on what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, I've been able to find happiness in my personal relationships with family, with friends, creating things I enjoy creating. I've definitely grown mentally a lot in the past few years. And one thing that I'm really trying to make an effort on doing is just being present in any moment I'm in. So I used to have a lot of FOMO when I was like, say, for example, I was hanging out with my family. Some of my friends were hanging out. I would not be present in that moment and be able to just enjoy the time with my family because I was so worried about not being with my friends and vice versa, you know? So yeah. I think I've been able to definitely just enjoy just being present and overall just kind of realizing that this might sound weird, but there was a tweet that I saw that was comparing life to like a video game. And I've always been big on video games. So when I read that like analogy, it really made me think kind of deeply that there's literally video games where you live your life and like try to survive. And that's essentially what life is. And video games are made for like entertainment purposes. So just kind of realizing that you should just try to enjoy life. Like you really only get one of these things that we're in, you know, and there's so much possibility and ways to just live life and enjoy living it. So just being present, and overall, I'm just a curious person. So I just love having conversations and learning from every moment I'm in. And there's really value in everything, you know, so generally just being like an optimistic person has just allowed me to be happy as time goes on.
Yeah, that's great. In a similar sense, I would say that I had kind of one of those revelations as well. When the pandemic started, I would say it kind of gave me a second to pause and reevaluate my life. And I think probably a lot of people are in that same boat. They've had that opportunity as well with everything that was going on, from, you know, coronavirus to social justice issues being brought up, stuff like that. I was able to really evaluate my priorities because I had been so on the throttle since high school ended, essentially trying to get to the next thing, that I realized when I finally graduated college that I enjoyed college, but I wasn't really present for the entirety of the last 4 years. I was kind of just trying to get to the next thing at every single given moment. It's like, check this box off, then this, then this, then this. So now I've also been in that same position where I'm able to actually enjoy those moments with people. And that's translated across all relationships to, I think, overwhelming success, because it would have been easy in the past to, you know, just sit there on the couch with X person and be on my phone, not really enjoy that time with them. But now it's so critical that I sit there and I soak in every moment with them. And that's translated to great relationships across the board. But also, I've learned a lot in this time from people that I had kind of written off in the past, like my parents, for example. I was just, I'm on my own path and I'm an adult now. But then coming back, I was able to actually value their input, value everything that they brought to the table in a way that I wasn't able to before in the last 4 years. So yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really important. And I think this pandemic has been kind of humbling for a lot of people because it forced everyone to be alone to some extent. And even if they weren't alone, to really slow down, like people who are going full throttle and just used to that lifestyle. I think in a weird way, it's kind of been a good thing that people have somewhat been forced to just self-reflect and slow down a bit, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I know that you touched on a little bit, you know, subtracting yourself or stepping back from some of the social scenes that you had been a part of in high school. I noticed that in the years, I don't know what year it was exactly, but you kind of downsized social media a little bit and cut out a lot of the people around you. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and the reason for doing so, and I guess how it's impacted you, positive and negative?
Yeah, I'm really glad you actually asked that, because that's one thing I wanted to definitely touch on. One, just social media in general. I realized how much time I spent on it, which most of us do. Mm-hmm. And what most of it was spent doing was just reading nonsense on Twitter. So it's just like reading a bunch of tweets from, like, I followed over like 300 people that I just knew or were acquaintances with. And I spent hours every day just like reading their tweets that weren't really valuable to me in any sort of way, you know? And that's one thing I realized back in like 2017-ish. And so what I did at the time was just delete my account. I just like deactivated my Twitter account. I just wanted to start fresh. And I've always loved Twitter specifically because I just like the simplicity of it, just sharing, you know, short tweets and stuff. And so what I did was made a new account, or actually started using a backup account that I had in the past, and just following only people that, most of people that I didn't know, and people who were smarter than me, more successful than me. And what I found is that Twitter and podcasts are very unique in that it's literally like free knowledge.
Yeah.
Like there's tons of CEOs, smart engineers, whoever it is, great thinkers in general, who go on these podcasts, and podcasts are free to consume, you know, like there's no cost. And same with tweets that they share. I can follow them for free and they're sharing some of the best ideas, you know, I've ever read, like just randomly on Twitter one day. So I just started following so many people that I knew, yes, I'm going to spend hours on Twitter every day because that's just, you know, what I do and what I enjoy doing. But at least I can make that time more valuable and be consuming information that will help me grow and, you know, help me become smarter in some sort of way, or at least learn new things. So I still follow some people I know on Twitter, but only people that I, you know, care to see their tweets at the end of the day. And one, I want to give a little hack, like a Twitter hack. I use Twitter lists, which is like a feature that Twitter has always had that nobody really pays attention to. But it's essentially a way to create like your own timelines, like, you know how you follow people on Twitter and they show up in your timeline?
Yeah.
So if, say, I wanted to create a list of professionals or creative people, which I do have, I can create a new list and then add a bunch of people in there. And now it's separate from my main timeline. I can separate that. And so when I go to this list, it's like its own timeline with only tweets from those people. So I have like five different lists that I'm always scrolling through, and they're all kind of categorized. And then I have my home timeline, which is the people I actually know in real life and follow. But that one's the smallest one out of all of them. So in reality, I follow hundreds of people on Twitter, but it only shows that I follow like 60 people because that's only like my home timeline.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, Twitter list is definitely something that kind of, if I would have discovered that before, I wouldn't have had to delete my original account. I could have just kept that. But yeah, another thing, I deleted Facebook because I realized that Facebook was just a giant waste of time.
Yeah.
And I did appreciate it for, you know, keeping up with family. But at the end of the day, that's the only reason it was useful for me. And I don't really like Facebook as a company. So I use Instagram, even though it's owned by Facebook, but it's the only one I have left to really like keep up with people I know and make sure I don't fall off completely. I keep that one. But to answer the last part of your question, as far as some of the people I used to hang out with in high school, just kind of downsizing my group, I kind of realized when I started, you know, just self-reflecting and realizing the situation I was in, that just because you're, you know, comfortable or used to people, they're not always the best people to be around, you know? And I don't even think I did it purposefully as much as like subconsciously. I just kind of started distancing myself from some of the people I used to hang out with the most in high school, and just kind of trying to focus on which relationships I had that I could really see myself having and growing, and the people I trusted the most. And that's really what it's come down to. I'm not really on bad terms with anybody. And I think something that people tend to think is that because you choose to like distance yourself from someone doesn't mean you hate them, you know. It just means that, you know, you just don't want to spend as much time with them or be as close as you typically have been with them. But it doesn't mean you have any sort of ill will with them or, you know, anything like that. It just means you're kind of doing what's best for you and realizing like which friendships might be toxic or not really helping you grow. So that's kind of what happened to me. I just kind of realized which relationships were helping me grow and who I could really count on and trust and confide in, even though I'm really bad at that. I've always been kind of a private person, so it takes a lot to like get it out of me and be personal sometimes, but I definitely do have those few people that I know I can trust, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like y'all have a pretty solid group that's pretty tight. So I think that's probably the best way to go about it at this point in time, is to downsize your group, have people that you can really rely on in times that are tough. And another thing that the pandemic really taught me is how many people and things were kind of accessory in my life and not really, I would say, necessary. Right. I think they were just there because it was convenient. And now I've been able to really pursue relationships that are purposeful, meaningful, and much more than surface level, I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool, though, about Twitter. I did not know you could do the list thing. And it seems like it's made it into actually a tool that can benefit you instead of something that's just mind-numbing. Because I think that's what social media has become for me. And I'm just scrolling through memes 24/7, which is funny, you know, but... It's not really a tool.
There's a place for that, but that's why kind of why I refuse to download TikTok, is that I know I'll just aimlessly scroll on there like I did with Vine back in the day, you know, for hours, and it'll be entertaining, but at the end of the day, it won't do anything for me, you know?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm anti-TikTok for sure. Why don't you talk a little bit about what it's been like growing up as someone that's always been creative in a society or world that kind of wants you to conform to a certain way of production or way of success, and how that's changed your outlook on life.
I know I've kind of already touched on it, but I think, I mean, I have my opinions on the education system in general, but I've always been creative since pretty much elementary school. I remember I was playing like games in elementary school, and I started actually recording my game content and like editing videos out of it. And that's how, and I was in third grade. And that's literally how I started editing videos, and it kind of snowballed into an actual hobby and something I've done for a lot of people. So, you know, I've always been creative. And like I said, it's just kind of sucks not knowing a whole lot of other creative people. I mean, in the social media age, everyone's kind of creative to some extent. And that's one good thing about TikTok, is that people create some crazy, like, creative content on there, and I really appreciate that. But as a whole, especially growing up, I always kind of felt alone in the aspect of just being creative and not knowing a whole lot of other creative people. So, but like I said, I've always enjoyed creating things, and it's a large part of the reason that I've been able to just kind of be happy in general, and that's really all there is to it.
Awesome. I think this would be the perfect way to jump into some music talk. It's a big part of both of our lives.
I think so, man.
What would you say is one of your favorite albums, and is there a specific time that it really reminds you of?
So, I definitely have a few of those. One album, and this might be like something you don't expect, but Watch the Throne.
It's a good album.
With Jay-Z and Kid Cudi. Oh my God. Jay-Z and Kanye West. I think it came out in, 2011, but that album, like, it's one that I always find myself going back to. But the reason I like the way you worded the question with how it reminds you of a certain time period is that I think that's really how people decide on their favorite albums. It's really like what you think of when you listen to it, because a lot of music is just the nostalgia behind it. And I remember when Watch the Throne came out, I was taking like a family trip to the beach. And so that was the soundtrack to that trip. So every time I hear it, I think back to that, and it definitely makes me enjoy it even more. But not only that, it's just a great album. I think Kanye West and Jay-Z were maybe not in their primes, but at some of the best music they were making, in my opinion, and I love the production on it. It's also kind of how I discovered Frank Ocean. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, another album I wanted to mention was Channel Orange. When Beautiful. Frank Ocean put that out, changed my life, man. So Channel Orange is definitely up there. I always go back to that album for sure. So those two are definitely two albums that I will put in my top albums of the past decade or so.
Those are two solid choices. And I liked what you said about the nostalgia thing. I think, I don't know where I heard this quote from, but it was something like, music is the closest thing to time travel that we have. And that blew my mind when I read that. I was like, yo,
that's so true.
Because every time I turn on an album and a song, I'm like, yo, I remember exactly what I was doing when I was listening to the song like 4 years ago. That's why for me, one of them, although it's a time in my life that can be characterized as kind of like a high swing before a big spiral, is definitely what a time to be alive.
Oh,
it just reminds me of like that thrill of like being a senior in high school, finally being so close to the finish line. And that album's a banger. Like,
dude, straight bangers.
It's beautiful. And it was like a surprise album too. So it was completely unexpected. No hype built around it. And yeah, every song on there is great.
The story behind that album is pretty crazy too. I remember that they were just in the studio making one song. And I believe the first song they made was Digital Dash, which for some reason is my most listened to song on that album. Dude, like that song just hits in all the right ways. But I remember they made that song and then they realized that, or somebody had the great idea of just them making a quick mixtape. So they literally slept in the studio for like something crazy. I want to say it was like a long weekend or maybe like just a week where they just like honed in, made all the songs and just like put it out the next week. Like something crazy like that. That never really happens in modern day times, especially with huge artists like that. So the fact that they made that album so quickly and it's so still enjoyable to this day, that's pretty crazy. Some of the best albums, I think, are the ones that didn't have a ton of thought behind them and they were just kind of made out of the enjoyment of it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It's the fact that it was produced by like what, a 22 or a 23-year-old Metro Boomin, who kind of was unheard of up until that point. Like he had built himself a small following on like the trap scene, but to be like executive producer for a Future and Drake album is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
What an album.
He blew up after that.
He did.
Especially with those, he could use those Drake tags, you know, as his producer tags after that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorites. I think to go further back would probably be Man on the Moon 1 for me. It reminds me of middle school for sure. And just, like, it sounds pretty emo, but just being in my room, like, late at night and listening to it, like, on my headphones or whatever, maybe my stereo at the time, and just thinking, like, wow, like, this is really relatable stuff, even though, you know, I'm not. It was a lot heavier stuff for Kid Cudi, but definitely like relatable in the feeling of the overall album. So
I revisited Kid Cudi just a few days ago, actually. Just was listening through his whole catalog and he really used to be my favorite artist. He still is definitely up there, but I think he just releases music so sporadically at this point. Yeah. But what I appreciate about him and what so many people appreciate about him is the things he touched on in his music. You know, he has gone through a lot as a person, you know, whether it was his addiction to drugs and loneliness that he dealt with and all kinds of stuff that he touches on and so many people are able to relate to. I think that's why he's seen as the idol of so many people, even huge artists such as Travis Scott, who has always voiced his praise for Kid Cudi because he was just able to resonate so much with his music. And so I'll always love Kid Cudi, I think. The Man on the Moon projects are two great albums, and I'm really excited for it because he's back on the grind, it seems like, so I'm excited for that.
He is. I'm excited to watch Bill and Ted 3 as well. I know he's in there. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard it's pretty decent for what you can expect a Bill and Ted movie to be.
Yeah, yeah, and he's a good actor, man. I was watching Westworld, and I didn't even know he was in it, but he just shows up in season 3, and it's just cool to see him. Like, it's always cool to see people switch lanes like that and still be really good at it. So he's a talented dude.
Yeah. I think he's also coming out with the podcast he had been tweeting about. And I think that would be super valuable to bring various guests on and touch on a lot of the things that he's talked about. I feel like I talk about Joe Rogan too much, but he was on Joe Rogan a long time ago. And that was one of my favorite Joe Rogan episodes where he just really lays out the stuff he's been through with extreme candor. And it's incredible. Yep. Moving on. What are some of the artists that you've been bumping most this year? I feel like this year and last year have been kind of a weird year for music. It seems like it's not at the peak of what it used to be. But there's definitely been some gems in there for sure.
Yeah. So one of the main artists I've really been bumping this year, which might surprise you. I don't know how you feel about this guy. Party Next Door.
I was not expecting that.
His first three albums, like Party Next Door 1 was a really great album, in my opinion. Yeah. Back in the day, I was really bumping that in high school. And then it seemed like the albums he put out after that just like consecutively got worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so the album he put out this year was called Party Mobile. And I didn't have high expectations because of that disappointment I felt with his like previous albums. So I went in just kind of just seeing what it was about. And it's literally become like one of my favorite albums this year. Like the more I listen to it, the more it kind of grows on me. So I think he really kind of outdid himself with this album. I think a lot of people should maybe revisit it and they might enjoy it. I mean, he does have his own kind of style that you may not vibe with or whatever, but I really enjoyed that album. So that Party Next Door for sure. Another one is Gunna for sure. He has definitely became like one of my favorite artists this year. He puts out so much music and it's all just very consistent. So I appreciate Gunna a lot. Yeah. And then the obvious answer would be The Weeknd for me. He's always been top one or two artists for me. So his album, it was an interesting album because it didn't really have a ton of greats. I mean, it didn't really have a song that amazed me on it, but it was just a collection of all good songs. Like there's no skips for me. So it's still a great album. And I think that's what was interesting about it. Usually albums are the opposite in that they have, you know, three or four standouts and then the rest is just kind of whatever it is. And what I liked about After Hours is I can listen to the whole thing and really enjoy it. So those three artists for sure, probably top three this year.
That's crazy. I'll have to definitely revisit Party Next Door. Yeah. Because I kind of wrote him off after P2, like everything after that.
Exactly.
Was kind of like, eh. And I tried to listen to his new album this year, but I think I also went in with the same mentality of like, this is going to suck, so I'm not going to
enjoy it. Yeah, I think, and that's what the problem, everyone who I have this conversation with kind of gets shocked when I bring him up. I don't know, man. Like, I think you will, if you listen back to it with more of an open mind, maybe, which is what I did. And then I really ended up enjoying most of the songs, actually. So yeah, you might want to give it another shot.
I will for sure. Something I really appreciate about him that is really not talked about enough is just how much he writes for other artists and produces for other artists. Like, he's known as just kind of like a outsider type of R&B dude, but he really writes some huge hits for like major people like Drake, stuff like that. So
Rihanna, Rihanna. I want to say it was that Work.
Yeah.
Was it Work? Or maybe one of those other ones that Drake and Rihanna made that he wrote the whole thing.
Yeah.
Including her verses and all of that. So
it's pretty crazy.
And that was his like number one hit. I remember when a demo came out of him, his version of Work, and that was apparently the demo that he sent to Rihanna for her to actually make the song. And people were saying, I like it better than her version. So in a weird way, if he would have just put it out himself, it could have been like his biggest hit yet, you know?
Yeah.
But he's a super talented guy, just musically.
Something that I've been appreciating a lot this year has been after Gunna did this like home concert at his mansion with like a band at the beginning of quarantine. And it was like all the proceeds went to social justice movements and stuff like that. It was really cool. But that made me kind of go in and visit some of the Tiny Desk concerts that they have on NPR. And I had never really listened to any of those, but it was really cool to see hip hop artists and R&B artists perform with like a small band like that. And I really appreciated those. I guess they're like remixes of the original songs because of that live component, but really cool. And there's this guy that I've been listening to that my uncle put me on, and I'm going to butcher his name, but his name is Toby Nwigwe, and he's from Houston. Really solid. I'll put him in the show notes, but he features his wife in like a lot of his music videos. All around, like really solid sound, really unique sound. I appreciate his music.
But is it T-O-B-I?
T-O-B-E, and then his last name is N-W-I-G-W-E. And he always says in his songs how to pronounce his last name, but I still can't pronounce it.
Yeah.
It's a unique name, but he's actually got some really good songs, really good talent. And then for me also this year, I've been bumping Jaden Smith.
Oh, of course.
I just really appreciate that dude's music in general. His first album, well, not his first album, but the one with 90 on it, Sire, was, I think, in my top 10 albums of all time for me.
Wow.
Probably just because of the way he meshes his like melodic combination with hip hop. I think he has like a really good grasp on that. I don't even know how to describe it, like good vibey music. It's just like euphoric almost.
That's something I really appreciate about him is that he, just given his name and who he is, he could be making like the pop hits that you hear on the radio, you know, but he's making the music that he really enjoys creating, and it's almost kind of like obscure in a way. But you can tell it's just what he enjoys making, and it's really, really, all of his projects are just enjoyable to listen to. And I love, like you said, how he is almost like a hybrid of hip hop and other genres that he just kind of blends together so well. I'm a big fan of Jaden for sure.
Yeah, him and his sister too. Her music is even more obscure, Willow. Sure. But they're just, man, they're a talented family.
I know, it's kind of messed up.
It is, man. The rest of us just trying to survive out here. I know that Drake is releasing a project in the near future. What are your expectations and thoughts for this?
Listen, I am a Drake fanboy, all right? Like, any given year, Drake is my number one streamed artist. And the reason for that, I don't want to be too much. I think I went on a date with this girl one time, right? Mm-hmm. And she brought up, we started talking about music, and she was asking me who my favorite artists were. And I was so scared to say Drake because I felt like that would automatically lose all my credibility, like right then and there. Because yeah. Drake is a basic ass answer, you know?
Yeah.
I remember just deciding to say it, like, well, Drake is definitely like my favorite. And like the look of disappointment on her face. But then I found out she doesn't even listen to hip hop, so it's fine. But
that's where the relationship ended.
Yeah, that's where it wasn't a second date. So yeah, I'm excited. I don't think Drake has ever made a bad album. He definitely has his better ones. And I had this conversation with John and Phil on the podcast episode, our latest one. And we talked about Drake at the end because I made a hot take that he is the most consistent artist of all time. And what I mean by that, I'm not saying he's the best artist of all time because that's, you know, subjective. But what I mean is that he has the most hits. Like, he has literally been making consistent hits pretty much every year since 2009.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of artists you can say that has that consistency. Needless to say, I'm excited for his album.
Very true.
I think it'll be a good one. And like I had this conversation with you, actually. I think he'll have a lot of features on this album, which hopefully with all kinds of artists, and I'm looking forward to it.
Something that I can really appreciate that he's done in recent years that I think puts him above people that he kind of came into hip-hop with, like Lil Wayne and Eminem, and they're not the same era, really, but those two artists, Eminem and Lil Wayne, really stagnated in their sound, and I think that's why they're not as popular now, and I think why everything they put out now is super mediocre, because it's still the same sound, which would have been great if it came out 10 years ago, but it's not that time anymore. So I think Drake has really pushed himself to elevate his creative levels and kind of explore all genres and take his sound to different levels, which is something that I can appreciate, even if I don't like all of Drake's music, is that he really does put in a lot more effort than I would say he needs to. He could be just dropping, you know, the same type of sound that he drops to get millions of views, millions of streams type of thing, but he doesn't. He pushes the box for sure. And he puts on a lot of younger artists, which he doesn't have to do either. It's great.
That's very true.
Is there any last concluding thoughts you have before we wrap this one up?
I can give another hot take.
We're here for it. The world needs it.
So here's something that I'm thinking. I think The Weeknd is the biggest artist in the world.
I think that's fair. I think he is.
I think that's a fair conclusion.
Present day Michael Jackson.
Well, yeah. So his voice, I mean, he sounds very similar. Mm-hmm. I think Michael Jackson brought a lot more to the show just in terms of the dancing and stuff. But the reason I say he's the biggest artist, well, for one, he's quite literally the biggest artist on Spotify for the past few months. He's number one in the world in listeners. But also what I realized is that I think his music really appeals globally more than other artists. And he kind of shows it on his social media that he is huge, like in the Asian market as well.
Yeah.
And he really plays into that. And I think as far as global appeal, he literally might be the biggest artist right now. And I know Spotify specifically, actually, there's more listeners outside of the U.S. on Spotify than there is in the U.S. So I think Spotify is a pretty good indicator of what's being listened to the most. And just the fact that he's been number one for, you know, consecutive months says a lot. So yeah. I think in another world, I grew up in Toronto, apparently, but
yeah,
I'm a Toronto fanboy, I think.
Drake, The Weeknd, Party Next Door.
Pretty much everyone I mentioned today is from Toronto. So
hey, as long as it's not Tory Lanez.
Oh, that guy's canceled, I think. How do you feel about that?
He's canceled, bro. Yeah. I think he has short man syndrome.
there's no way to justify what he did. And also, I remember I added him on Snapchat and started following him on social media like some years ago. And I just always got a weird vibe from that guy. Like, he was just 100%. Too wild, too reckless. And I don't know, And what sucks is he makes pretty good music, in my opinion, but
yeah,
I wish he just focused more on that. But yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I got to delete all his songs now.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that guy, he's canceled, man.
He is canceled. He's done. And I think, to touch back on The Weeknd briefly, I think he did say at one point in time, this may be room for fact check right here, that he his goal was to become the biggest artist in the world, or to become like the best artist in the world. And I don't remember exactly when he said that, but I think it had happened like kind of after the Trilogy era, where he could have stayed more underground and stayed more fringe, and he decided to kind of expand into the mainstream and like take his sound there when he didn't really have to. I think he was successful enough in the sound that he had made during Trilogy. So yeah, he definitely was able to capture the mainstream somehow with his music, which I think is really crazy, because that music was never mainstream until him.
And to be honest, some of his best music to this day, in my opinion, I think if you go back and listen to the Trilogy, like songs like The Morning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is probably my most listened to Weeknd song even to this day. So what's crazy about him is he was so obscure that his music was blowing up and nobody even knew what he looked like. Yeah. I remember he did his first show in 2012 when his music had already been popping for at least a year. And there's this video of him performing at like a small venue in Toronto. And he, you know, you could tell he's just not comfortable on stage at all. But that probably was like a very pivotal moment for him to just start being comfortable performing. And it was able to really, I think, help him realize that, okay, I can appeal to a much wider audience if I want to. But yeah, he had a very unique coming up, I think, in music.
Definitely. I did not know it was 2012. I feel like he's been around for ages, but 8 years to go from fringe MySpace type of guy to complete stardom is insane.
And if you were to ask me if The Weeknd would ever be bigger or as big as Drake, you know, if you were to ask me that even 5 years ago, I would have never believed it. Like,
yeah,
the way he has become a superstar is surprising, but pretty awesome, I think.
It is awesome. I appreciate him.
So I'll give another hot take. No, I'm kidding.
Let's do it.
I'm done.
All right. That's a good one to wrap this one up on. But I think this was a really valuable conversation. And I think you've added a lot of insight into your life and the things that you've been through, your unique path. I appreciate you coming on, Arthur.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, man. Later.